you're back. Ah, look, it's lovely to see you all. Well, not see in the conventional sense, obviously, more. Well, I suppose we're just blasting our uninformed thoughts and opinions about songs you love right into your ears once a week. It's a bit of a liberty, really, isn't it? But you know what? We enjoy it. Put on your wigs and your makeup, get the Hoover out and buckle up. We're talking Queen.
Brand new angle, highly commendable. Seaside Park Review. Woo-hoo. Seaside Park Review.
Blah, 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 blah.
Seaside Park Review.
How you doing, Kev?
I am doing, I'm doing all right. I'm not the absolute tip top of my game, but I don't always need to be, you know?
Well, you're not, you're not at the top of your game.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
This is even worth doing this then.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
I was going to say, maybe we'll get a Queen song where they went at the top of the game and it'll be, you know, it'll be apt. Yeah.
I was going to say, I was taking a dump earlier and I had a really great anecdote I was going to tell. And then now I've forgotten it. So
you pooped it out.
So there you go.
Oh, you fucking idiot.
Aren't I?
Yes.
Yeah, but I'm not even joking. I was sitting on the toilet and I thought, you know what? This thought I have, which is quite funny, I'll tell that. It'll be my little anecdote to open up the show. And there she is. Gone. Gone diddly on.
Well, not an anecdote as much as I read them, but I was doing a bit of research for another podcast that I do called The Tom Petty Project, which you are aware of, and you've written all sorts of music for. Just a little quote that from Tom Petty that I thought was really, really cool, and it's sort of a little bit apropos because we just covered a song from Queen 2, which, of course, was their second album. And the quote is, and I mean, I'm sure you'll have heard similar sort of things, he says, you know, you've got all your life to write your first album, and then you've got 9 months to write the second one, which I think, you know, for those Queen nerds who are huge Queen 2 fans, it makes it all the more remarkable because I don't even know if it was 9 months where they turned that album round in, and something of that quality to turn it around so quickly. And of course, it was the day after we released our episode on March of the Black Queen. It was the 50th anniversary of Queen 2.
Yeah. Yes. Very cool indeed. Yeah. And that's a real thing. Imagine whatever. I mean, however old you are when you sign your first record contract, even if you're 22, you've literally had whenever you started writing till then. And I found as an older songwriter that the ideas come fast and furious when you're young.
Right.
And they slow down as you get older. And I think it's just, I don't know that it's the ideas that slow down, or it's just like, you know, I've done that or I recognize that that's been done over there by this person. So
yeah,
if I want to contribute, then I got to kind of do my own thing, my own stamp, find your own voice. And that's the hard part. Right. So,
But you see it even in, you know, a band like Queen is a really good example of it, where the songs, I don't think the really sort of inventive, really, you know, fresh sort of original ideas, they weren't there, or they certainly weren't tapping into them in the same way later on in their career. And so, you know, the 80s output, which, you know, Queen fans comment on lots, there's gold in amongst the, you know, in the copper light, but there's plenty of stuff in there. You just think, they're running out of steam, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I, you know, sorry, don't mean to draw this back to myself, but I find even now I'll go back and I'll look at and listen to those ideas I had. And I kind of wonder if they did that too. You know, they went back in their catalog and there's like, oh, you know, geez, I had the song that we didn't use on this album or that album.
Yeah.
And I wonder if we just reworked it or rejigged it and that's what I think sometimes, you know, you lose some of those, like, hey man, it wasn't good enough. It wasn't good enough for Queen 2 or whatever album. You know, we should leave it on the shelf. But I mean, you just don't know, right?
Yeah. And well, it's funny you say that because the song that's coming out tomorrow as we record this is Mary Jane's Last Dance.
Right. Of course,
which was on Petty's Greatest Hits album. And there was a 4-year gap between him, because he wrote that basically during our 5-year gap. He wrote that during the Full Moon Fever sessions sort of 88-ish. And then, but couldn't find the chorus. He didn't have a chorus for it, but he had the verses and all the lyrics basically worked out, and sort of goes into the studio for the Greatest Hits sessions with Rick Rubin. And sort of, you know, Rubin's obviously said, well, do you have anything laying around? Because really it doesn't need to be top shelf Petty. We just need to record something that's going to fit on this record to sell the record. And he plays him this. He says, oh, yeah, you should definitely find a chorus for that. There's definitely something there. And then Petty goes away and finishes up. So sometimes you can revisit. He says, like, it's, you know, Dylan always said, he said, once you get past, like, for Dylan, it was like, this 6 months, if it's more than 6 months old, like, if I wasn't excited enough to use it in that time, it's probably not good enough, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, that's Dylan, who writes fucking 18 songs before breakfast, but.
Well, yeah. And I mean, look how well that turned out. Look how well it turned out for Tom, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And there again, I do believe I've had lots of old ideas kicking around that I was able to turn into something, but you just, yeah, man, it's, who knows, right? So, interesting, yeah. And you, so Tom Petty, hey, Last Dance.
Mary Jane's Last Dance is such a great fucking track.
I think he might be talking about marijuana on that particular song, Kevin.
Yeah, he isn't. I mean, a lot of people think he is, but he just... The quote is that he said, like, I don't know, it's dumb things about marijuana. I think it's mainly probably just about a girl. I mean, and his comment was, it was quite a good comment, though. He said, you know, I don't think I would write a song about pot. There's not enough there to write about. And then when you think about songs that have been written about weed, they're really only talking about the high you get from it. There's no real exposition beyond that. I mean, Black Sabbath, Sweet Leaf, maybe, because then they sort of talk about that psychotropic, you know, effect on creativity, maybe. But really, all you do is, like, you know, Hits from the Bong by Cypress Hill, which I fucking love, but they're just talking about being high. What else do you write about weed? How do you write a song about weed other than it just going to sound like every other song about weed? Well, so there you go.
Isn't that why you would write the song? I mean, I don't know. You're putting you're kind of stating that like it's like not a good thing. It's like, well, I mean, yeah.
Well, not a good thing, but it's like you said, you're looking at it saying, yeah, well, I think like other people have already done that. Do I need to tread that same ground? Do I need to,
yeah,
you know, so.
That's true. Well, okay. Well, I'll tell you this then. I've always thought Mary Jane's Last Dance was about smoking weed.
Yeah.
And as I recall, it's quite a common chord progression in that song too. It's like a lot of songs use that whole same.
Yeah. And, you know, Danny California blatantly sort of lifted it. And Tom said as much, like, you know, when someone said to him, well, are you going to sue Red Hot Chili Peppers? It's like, nah, he says, there's no bad intent there. And, you know, a lot of songs sound the same. So, you know, that sort of common sense to sort of say, yeah, no, it's probably just because we probably took it from somewhere else and we just changed the groove of it. And, it, you know, that's the thing is when you combine that chord structure with that same groove and you sort of, your delivery of the lyrics is roughly sort of around the same kind of cadence and tempo and everything. It's like, okay, well, that's a lift. Mm-hmm. But the chord progression, you can't fucking trademark a chord progression, right? I mean, it's insanity.
Led Zeppelin built an entire career out of doing that.
Well, yes, they did. Much to the chagrin of a lot of people. A lot of people will never forgive them for that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like a bit of Zep, Randy. You know, not too proud of me. I fucking love that band.
Yeah, I do. I do as well. They just stole a lot of music from black artists. like so many other artists.
I was going to say, so did fucking Clapton. And
well, it's okay. We'll move on here right away. But
yeah.
And you know this, of course, but I did a little TV interview where, because
I borrow
from a lot of, you know, reggae styles. And
yeah.
And it's in the interviewer asked me on live on television if I'd ever been accused of cultural appropriation, which I said, no, I have not. But isn't that ultimately, Kay, isn't that ultimately what music is? It's a mashing of cultures and of styles and of everything that you've heard and whoever the artist is. Whatever it is that they've heard in their life, man, and that they're putting it into this ball, and they're like, yeah, here you go, you know, and they're tossing it to you. I mean, Queen is no different. I mean,
well, yeah,
you,
I mean,
you know, do you think, you know, they wrote Seaside Rendezvous because they were listening to speed metal 24/7? No, they were listening to fucking music in that vein and that style. Yeah. That's, you know what I mean? That vaudeville style.
Well, and I think, in, you know, if you get right down to it, in anthropological terms, I'm pretty sure that culture is appropriation just by definition.
Yeah.
It's appropriation and evolution and development and building on ideas and themes, and music's part of culture. So I know what, you know, the problem with overt cultural appropriation when you sort of, you know, you're sort of wearing the dreads and you there are lines that you can sort of say, well, that's a bit sure. much, but I don't, I agree. I mean, But yeah, I remember when I watched that interview with you because you'd sort of sent me the link and I watched it. I was like, what the fuck? That question just came out of nowhere. It's like, why are you asking what?
Yeah.
This guy's on your TV show just to talk about his new song, his new album's coming out, and you're fucking hitting him with like existential questions. Like, fucking hell, wow.
Yeah.
I thought you dealt with it very well.
I think I batted it down. I hope I did. It didn't sound like too much of a tool. Although that does come easily. Hey, Kev, why are we here?
Oh, we should do a little bit of podcasting about this this rock band that we love, Queen, eh? How about that for an idea?
As far as I know, our lovely listeners do not want to hear us go on and on about some stupid fucking interview I did a few years ago in the smallest television station known to man.
No. That's in Prince Albert.
Okay. Second smallest.
Yeah. I mean, last week we had an absolute outright banger. Mm-hmm. It's a fan favorite. And we sort of guessed, you said, you know, you went 88-12, which I think might be the highest you've ever guessed. I think.
Maybe.
I think 85-5 might be the highest you've been before. And I went 94-6. I thought it would be.
Wow.
I wasn't too sure because I thought, well, I wanted to go 95-5. And I think I maybe even said them yet. But I was like, well, I've been wrong before. Maybe I won't go too high, but I can should have gone through because on Twitter, Randy, what was the result of the poll for March of the Black Queen?
Well, we got a champion at 98%. There's no points, no nothing, and biting the dust at 2%. So out of 102 votes. So what is that, Kev? What is that, 4 against?
No, it's 100. It's 100 to 2. I mean, the math works. It balances out because it does round a little bit. So it's pretty much dead on 100 to 2. Yeah. So, I mean, two people who, you know, when we go read through the comments here, no one's kind of said why they downvoted it. So you suspect a little bit of trolling, but that's okay. That's okay.
Well, I mean, so now hear me out. Can somebody just not scroll by and just go like, fuck you guys and hit?
Yeah.
Like it just downvoted, like
absolutely
with absolutely no, yeah. Well, maybe there's some of that too. So
I also remember that someone had really early on had voted Dust, and then you know expounded on it in the comments about why they love Another One Bites the Dust. So no, you've got the wrong end of the stick here. This is no. This is our voting system. This is our up and down system. Oh, fuck, all right. Never to be heard from again. But you know what? Let's read some socials out, Randy. Andrew Holloway says, undoubtedly one of their early peaks. Slight discomfort at the use of an unacceptable word, but that aside, an absolute tour de force in words and music. Mahusive champion. And we didn't actually get into that. And yeah. I didn't bring it up because, you know, the N-word's in that song, and it's funny because it got edited out of the lyric video, which I'd commented further down. But I didn't want to bring it up. Go ahead, sorry, yeah.
Oh, I apologize. So was it in the video that we watched?
No, like, it wasn't. They took it out of the official Queen YouTube channel has that word edited out of the video for obvious reasons, you know.
Yeah, sure. It's funny. It's interesting. Yeah, because I had saw this tweet earlier.
Yeah.
And I was like, I couldn't even think of the word. So, okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah. So, and it, like I said, I mean, it's contextually, and it's funny because, you know, well, not funny, but for the conversation that, you know, the pretty lengthy conversations we had around Don't Try Suicide, no one really batted an eyelid at the use of very culturally inappropriate term, which shows that context is important, right? I mean, people accept that Freddie wasn't using that word in a vulgar or violent, aggressive sense. He was using it it was just a phrase, part of two words. And it's part of that was just what that was called at the time, you know, as wrong as that was. But yeah, anyway.
Right. Copy that.
Black Pie says, anyone dusting this should hand their queen card in. I worked with her Madge the Black Queen herself in her later years, and I'm sure she would have demanded it. She also foretold reclaiming the naughty word. So, yeah, there you go.
There you go. Andy Hall, top three for me, 1 week after a bottom three. Are you sure that wheel's not actually a pendulum? Well, it might be. Queen 2 is a masterpiece, he says. I'm with Kevin. Side Black is absolute perfection. 1974 was a prolific year for the greatest band of all time. My favorite year. March of the Black Queen is a champion, 100%. I think Andy likes it.
And I don't think, obviously, no, you wouldn't be immediately aware that they did release Queen 2 and Sheer Heart Attack in the same fucking year, which is just insane to be able to put out two albums of that quality in the same year. But
right. Paul Bradbury, my favorite Queen song, Freddie with the Brakes Off at his brilliant best. It's one I always recommend to people wanting to know more about the band. Think Bohemian Rhapsody's Bonkers and Brilliant? Get a load of this.
So, Risky Georgeness. So this is George from the Judas Priest cast, or maybe formerly the Judas Priest cast. I'm not exactly sure where that shows at 100%, but...
What are you trying to say? They let him go, or...?
I think he maybe handed it over. I think he maybe sort of handed it off to the next generation. I think. I could be speaking out of turn there. If George, if you're listening, just bring me in if I'm wrong there. But he says, this song is a perennial favorite in my home. I put on while cooking and sing my alternate lyrics, mash up the black beans, which I really quite like. Nikki, forget your sing-alongs and your lullabies. Surrender to this ditty of the highest kind. Dance with the devil in beat with this band. To hell with those who will dust it down. Now it's time to champion forever and ever. So there you go. That's la 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 la. I always appreciate when people take the time, put a bit of effort in when they're commenting to make us smile or impress us. So well done, Nikki. Very nicely done.
Thanks, Nikki. Lynn Davidson says, my favorite Queen song, just barely edging out Barry Feller. It's magical and brilliant. I'm going to find anyone who dusts it and make them pay. Yeah. Ooh, I'd be worried. Tom Bojay says, I hereby challenge those who have dusted this song to stand up and show your face. Or are you going to hide behind the anonymity of the interwebs?
The anonymity of the interwebs? Wasn't that a fucking horror movie or something? Oh, yeah. That's the Amityville Horror I'm thinking of. Yeah.
Well, it's pretty close, though.
Mike Levin says, the easiest of champions for me and the first Queen song I remember. A timely song to coincide with the 50th anniversary of the release of Queen 2. In brackets, in my opinion, the best Queen album. Hey, a lot of people's opinion. Hashtag champion. Queen Rocks Australia says, blooming bonkers, breathtakingly brilliant, quintessential Queen, better than Bo Rap, clearly a champ.
The Brigadier, a stark contrast from last week's episode, which had one of the top three worst ever Queen songs and their worst single, to this, one of their top three finest songs, in my opinion.
So you're getting the love here, Andy, eh?
Yep.
Darren Halliwell says, champion, one of my favorite Queen songs. It is only their second album. To have recorded a song of this quality is unbelievable. God, it wasn't the only one off that fucking album either that was this ambitious and that grand. So, Jim C at Cody Sparkle says it's a legendary track. Anyone dusting this is only doing it out of spite. Pharmacist is a great track too. So there you go, Randy. A little bit of love for Pharmacist on Harley.
Yes,
this is the lead out track on that album, on that episode.
Yeah, which I'm not sure who I told this to, but you know. Those pharmacists had it way too good for too long. Somebody had to call them out. It was me.
It's about time.
Rob Marr, champion. From one extreme to the other, one of Queen's best songs on arguably the single greatest side of music they ever made. If you're dusting this one, hand your Queen card in at the door, because
you're out of here.
He's got a nice, he's got a nice gif.
Well, and
who's that crazy looking dude?
I think I'm pretty sure it's, you know what? So I'm a Star Trek fan, Randy.
Yeah.
I never got into Deep Space Nine. I don't know what it was. I've really got to give it another try because everyone says it's great. But I'm pretty sure it's a character from Deep Space Nine. So maybe they're on a holodeck there and he's playing a baseballer. Baseball ump. Ump. Umpire. Ump.
Ump.
What they're called, right?
There you go. Pretty sure. Ruddy Rutherford says, I envy anyone who gets to listen to this for the first time without interruptions every 30 seconds. It is.
Yeah. Okay, Ruddy. All right.
Thanks, Ruddy. You're ready. I'd have a blue powder monkey as my first tattoo if I could design one. By the way, a powder monkey was a lad who fetched gunpowder in gunships.
Yeah. Well,
if that's true, I did not know that. And
it is true.
It is true. And, you know, there is... a lad named Kev Brown who might just design you that tattoo if you're not careful there, Ruddy.
I am actually writing that down as we speak because I really would like to take a run at that. So,
Kev is an excellent designer, so you're in good hands.
Oh, well, thank you, sir. Kathy Klimek, I think Katie did, who is on our Discord, but I think, you know, either might be someone who's come over from Facebook and just reset up a Twitter account or... maybe not. Anyways, I think first time commenter is what I'm trying to say. It says, I cannot in good conscience have a favorite Queen song, just different levels, but this one is definitely in the top level. That's a good way of putting it. And Lisa Malloy says, Donut was spun big time. In my top five Queen songs, Champion. Big time in capitals. That nice. Reminds me of the Peter Gabriel song, which I do quite like.
Yeah, me as well. PJ at New Mercury says, top tier Queen, in the Premier League of Queen songs, Tis But a Champion. I'm pretty sure PJ likes it, Kev. And Matt Greenham says, I'm with Kev here. Totally love everything about this track. The stomping rock of I Reign With My Left Hand and I Rule With My Right is right up there with my favorite moments in the Queen catalog. A tour de force, a top 10 champion.
There no, you. I must pull you up a little bit, though, because you didn't pronounce Matt's name right.
Oh, you didn't, and you also
didn't give, you didn't give him his full attribution either. It's Matt Greenham, verified.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good. Good. Well, so as long as we got that settled,
I'm going to start adding the verified on the end.
Yeah,
of
I think you. I think you should, because a lot of people going around claiming to be Matt fucking Greenham.
That's it. There you go, Matt. You've got to change your Twitter handle to the Matt Greenham, because that's the popular thing for famous people to do. Alex Small says, so we go from the second worst Queen song in the catalog last episode to the second best in the catalog behind Friends Will Be Friends. Lol. Yeah, no, yeah, no, no. Do I mean it? Nah, as if. Champignon.
I'm French! Why do you think I have this outrageous accent, you silly king?
I think he's calling the song a mushroom, Randy, which I definitely approve of.
I think he's thinking about frying mushrooms, and then he was writing this tweet. That's what happened.
Fried mushrooms. Thomas Brunkard says, template for so many of their more grandiose works, Champion and Queen of the Night.
Steve Ursel, magnificent song, complex and sophisticated, but also raw, and let's face it, utterly deranged. Freddie's genius in full glorious bloom, but the whole band is on fire throughout. Yeah, I agree. And Alice's Dad, March of the Black Queen. I don't think I'm being totally controversial when I say this is a better song than Bo Rap. Oops, I think I tipped my hand here. It's Champion. It always will be. Totally unique, totally Queen, totally Freddie. There's nothing else to say. Well, I think in a way you kind of said it all.
Well, I mean, I think there was lots more to say because we spent at least fucking 45 minutes.
That's true, Barry. Because as a matter of fact, okay, so Barry, just next time, just send us a PDF and we'll read it out.
Rob Patton, I've been waiting for this moment since episode 2, The Prophet Song, as this is Mr. Randy's Day of Judgment. Henceforth, you will be Mr. Randy no longer. You have finally redeemed yourself. This is the greatest Queen song. Full stop, period, little round punctuation thingy. Randy, you have been absolved of your sins. You know, you're back. You're back. That's what I'm saying. You're back. You're back with the, you know, you're back with us.
I saw that tweet, and you know, honestly, I really feel I feel like, you know, I felt lighter, you know, like and I felt like I was just floating on air there for a couple hours.
Oh, so. No, that's just because you had a big poo.
Oh, yeah, no, that wasn't this afternoon when I was
there. All right, okay. Thought you were maybe reading it on the Kazi. David A. Wilson says, 14 years old when I first heard this, it was truly incomprehensible to me how anyone could create such sounds on a record. I had no idea what the song was about sonically or lyrically. It was just incredible. Amazing. Choose your superlative. It just works. Why? No idea. Top tier. And then there's like a gif here of a very striking young lady in a, I don't know who the hell that is, but sort of a,
what is that? What is that from? What is that from? Yeah, David, what is that from? Tell us. Is that
is it Black Swan? Is that that's a thing?
Yeah,
right?
I was gonna say, maybe is that from Black Swan? It might be, yeah.
All right. March of the Black Swan.
That's right. There you go. Richard Hearn, Mad as a Box of Frogs, but Prob, my favorite Queen song. Definitely proto Bo Rap, but retains power because much less familiar. Melodies and vocals are wonderful. Freddie has the ability to sing Blued Powder Monkey singing in the dead of night and still make it seem like he's speaking to you. And isn't that true? I think it is true because I'm the one who just said it. Chrissy at the Waters of Love. Yeah, on the way home from work, this affirmed that this is my favorite Queen song and that Queen 2 is my favorite Queen album of all time. 100 out of 10 The Ultimate Champion, Bo Rapp's ancestor. It's fucking crazy, over the top, and it's singable.
Which is directed directly at you, Mr. Cardinal. It's,
yeah, yeah. She's directed right at me. And you know what, Chrissy? Yeah, sure. It's singable. Is there a really solid, repeatable course? Well, you know, we could talk about that because there, I don't think there is. Are there great, you know, lyrical and melodies, lyrics and melody? Yeah, there is.
Just get off his back, I think is what he's saying.
Just don't 100% agree, that's all.
Look, Rob Hatton has let him out of the doghouse. Let's not start sliding back in there yet already, you know? Brian Crozier says, as queen as it gets. If it's not a champ, then what the fuck are you doing here? But that's okay, because I'm here, and it's a stone cold champ. Yeah, and Tari Hussey goes on and says, is it possible to dislike this song, to find the production over the top or with too many sections? Yes. To anyone who likes Queen, for whom these are plus points, is it possible to dislike this song then? Possibly. I love it, though. Championi. So, yeah, Harry's kind of making a fairly dispassionate, you know, disinterested case before the court. And good on you, Harry. But I'm glad you upvoted it. Keith Austin says, what an absolute banger. My favorite ever Queen track. Without this, there would be no Bo Rapp. The lyrics, composition, melodies, solo, and vocals all merged to become one hell of a masterpiece. Champion. P.S. Glad I manifested it. So Keith was the one who called for it. I got to figure out some. Yeah, we need some kind of. We need like a Hall of Fame or something in the Discord channel. I'll start putting people up when they've manifested. Or some sort of graphic or some kind of thing. Like we need to do. To you know to really sort of put Keith's accomplishment in its proper perspective.
We should send that man a Seaside Pod review can opener.
Can opener. Huh?
Bottle opener.
But don't you think, Randy, isn't that going to open a can of worms?
Oh, no. Oh, you did it. You did it, didn't you? Blair A98. What a song. One of their very best. Lyrics are complete nonsense, but what an oral masterpiece. Aaron Mullen, bombastic and fantastic. A right rollicking roller coaster ride of a song with enough underlying menace to unsettle any greatest hits fan who strays from the singles' safety.
She called me Mr. Bombastic, tell me fantastic, put me on my box, she says I'm Mr. Rowe.
This most definitely is our queen, and she's a fucking black-hearted champion. Wow.
Yeah. I love that.
Aaron really just laid it right out. Paul Rowley, after one of the worst songs last week, onto one of the very best. An absolute complex masterpiece. Champion. All day long. So yeah, these folks, they like the complex music. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
And the Invisible Man did not spin their donuts in that case.
No,
you know?
It did not. No.
That's... I do love, I mean, you know, the vote split on the Invisible Man fairly pretty evenly down the middle, but I love that it's still getting a fucking boot in even next week.
Even in the following right. week, people are still saying it's a fucking piece of shit.
I'm the Invisible Man.
Hugh Jenkins says, my absolute favorite Queen song and has been for a while. I think this and Great Congrats are the early kernels of Bo Rapp. Also, some of my favorite piano playing from Freddie. Yeah, the piano on that song, we didn't actually really talk about that enough because Freddie's piano playing on that song is absolutely fantastic. Top draw.
Yep.
Tom Bojay, again, says, okay. Who the hell voted no? Champion. All the way. Abby says, right. Champion. Obviously. But I will die on the hill that it should be. Roger. My life is in your hands, I fall and I fly. Freddie, I'll be what you make me. Roger, I'll do what I like. Both, I'll be your bad boy. I expect Roger to come back every time. And so that's that, you know, Freddie, Roger sings that one line when they sort of come back, just after they come back in. And so I think she's just advocating there for a call and response, which probably would have worked.
Yeah, I get it.
Pods Like Us, my favorite Queen song, an absolute masterpiece. And that's Marv from Pods Like Us. You guys should be listening to Pods Like Us. Very good podcast. I was a guest on there many, many, many moons ago, and we had a very, very good chat, and he's a wonderful fella from back over my neck of the woods.
What, did you guys have a falling out or something? How come you haven't been back on the podcast?
It's not really a multiple appearance type of show, to be honest. I mean, he has invited me back to talk about this one, so maybe I will. Well, maybe I fucking will. What do you think of that?
Yeah, you know, just quit ruffling feathers, and maybe you'll get fucking asked onto some more podcasts, Kevin, okay?
Dominic Pierce says, top tier queen, a masterpiece from an amazing album. Is Side Black the greatest side of any Queen album? I think so. It should definitely be listened to in its entirety rather than as individual songs. Champ. And to finish up Twitter, Daniel Fletcher says, over the top, bombastic nonsense, but pure genius and the very essence of Queen. Champion. Anyone dusting this has clearly lost their minds, or their ears, or both. Yeah, and fuck Dutch painters while we're at it.
Where's my ears?
You know, I didn't, because I usually do talk about the vote on Facebook. So this one was even more emphatic than Twitter. It was 31 people saying champion and none people saying bites the dust. So 100% to zero, which made for a grand total, actually bumped up a little bit. Our grand total between Twitter and Facebook was at 98.5% champion, 1.5% dust. And 98-2, I should say to you, Randy, for last week's song, Match the Black Queen, is the highest rated song now that we've covered.
Wow, I would doubt. I mean, what else? I mean,
this is what I was saying. I think to someone.
Bo Rap, nobody's going to vote that higher, obviously.
No, it's not going to. I don't think Bo Rap, because there are going to be people, and I know a couple of them are going to downvote Bo Rap. Just, I think some of it is some people downvote it just, you know, because it's the big song and it's overplayed and yada, 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 yada. But that's very, I think that's a bit silly. But anyway, I don't think it's past 98. So.
I think in a way, as much as Bo Rap is polarizing to some extreme Queen fans, they owe their reputation, their career,
yeah,
ultimately on it, and Mike Myers,
which people forget about the resurgence after Wayne's World came out.
I think we'll go with a little Bohemian Rhapsody, gentlemen.
Good call.
Okay, over on Facebook, my friend Sean McGinnity from the Sean Geek and Fast Fret podcast says, okay, for starters, whoever is saying there is too much banter can go get bit. This is what separates this show from the pack. I never came for the Queen, and I ain't staying for the Queen. The Queen is like window dressing to this show for me now, and I still don't know what song is coming. Be back in a bit. So he hadn't actually listened to it at that point. But you know what, Sean? Thank you very much. That's lovely of you to say.
I hate Winnipeg.
Richard Stott, Champion of Champions. I won't say it's the best song in the catalogue, but it probably shares that title with maybe three or four others. The quintessential Queen song, whether you love all eras or just the early stuff. As a prog fan, but ultimately considering Queen my favourite band of all time, this, and Queen 2 as a whole, is perfect. There are no negatives to this song whatsoever, just an incredible piece of music. And to land as an episode on the same week as its 50th anniversary, the wheel clearly decided to play nice this week. Great song, great episode, and Randy really needs to go back to this one and give it a few more spins, which you said you were going to do. And I mean, we'll eventually, you know, once we've covered Side Black in its entirety, then we are definitely doing at some point some sort of episode where we do listen to it all the way through and we talk about it as a piece. So
I did, I will say, I did on my own listen to it once more, possibly twice.
Mm.
Yeah. So there you go. I did do it. Patrick McCarthy. Is it too late to dust the Invisible Man?
Never. It's never too late to dust the Invisible Man.
It's never too late. This is the first episode where I've constantly hit the back button two or three times to wallow in every glorious moment. I can sing it all from memory and yet still hear new bits. Unfettered Frederick love and joy. Yeah, awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Patrick. Mark Spang Hansen says, a champion all the way through, Queen at their very best. Amazing music and lyrics by Freddie. A showcase for each band member's abilities. Freddie's vocals and piano, Brian's guitar, Roger's drums and vocals, the high notes, and John's bass. The song's harmonies are just perfect. And just love the last bit. You think the totally over the top song bit is over, but then Freddie thought, let's give a bit more just because he can.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, that's Frederick, man. He knows.
I love the rope-a-dope. Suzanne Morris says, superb Queen. Love, love, love the whole album. And the transition into Funny is fantastic. Utter champion, without a doubt. And I'm glad we started playing a little bit of those transitions for you, too, because it definitely makes a difference to how you listen to it.
Yo, for sure.
Our pal, the Dude, Alan Dudney, says, dear Sir Kev and Your Holiness the Cardinal. Sir Kev? To it. It says, could have written a novel on this masterpiece, but we'll keep it as short as possible. To me, March of the Black Queen, then he goes on to write something that's not as short as possible at all. And you know what? I don't give a fuck. Right away, sir. It says, to me, March of the Black Queen is like a most favorite film where you have loads of parts that you love and can watch repeatedly. My favorite bit, and apologies for being a bit morbid, is at the very end when I think Randy thought it had finished. So the final piece of music for my funeral medley would be Forget your sing-alongs and your lullabies. Surrender to the city of the fireflies. Dance to the devil and beat with the band. To hell with all of you, hand in hand. But now it's time to be gone forever. Continuing to Funny How Love Is to fade. This brings a tear to my eye and sends shivers up my spine. Freddie Mercury was a musical genius. Brilliant marathon of a show, by the way. And he's written in brackets at the end. Fucking novel again. And, you know, hey, thanks so much, Alan. We really appreciate your feedback. And, yeah, write as much as you want, man. It's all good.
Of course. Our buddy Steve.
I love gold.
Who sometimes goes by the name Evan Oman. If this isn't a champion, I wouldn't know what else is. As far as I know, from this album, nothing else than Seven Seas has ever gotten radio play on the album. That's why I strive to become prime minister, so that I will be invited on national radio and I can pick my own songs to play. Thanks again for the great podcast. Well, I love that. It's so great. You know, Steve, I'm not sure where you are. You probably don't need to become prime minister. Like, you can get a job at a radio station, you know, or, you know, there's community radio. You could go there.
That's really coming in from the top rather than building up from the bottom.
No, that's good. That's really good.
I love it.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate that.
We should say too that, you know, he's one of his countrymen here, Rude Seeger, says, just tell me which party and you have my vote. Better than the clones who were trying to get anything done today. We've got a movement here, people.
We got a Queen movement.
Russell Watkins says, champion. Essential listening for Queen fans, this song is both menacing and joyful at the same time. Staggering creativity throughout the track and delicious lyrics. I never grow tired of it. Nah, dude, me neither. Alexander Rice says, March of the Champion. Black heart emoji. To channel Randy, this is a definite donut spinner. This epic track always ranks in my top three. And you know what, though? Donut Spinner, TM, Randy Woods. This epic track always ranks in my top three Queen songs, with Queen 2 in my top three Queen albums. March of the Black Queen is all that Queen could and would be. Thank you to my fellow Canadians for your entertaining podcast. I look forward to the sharing of the socials from your listeners as much as to the new track discussion. It's great to hear the different opinions amongst our community of Queen fans. Keep up the great podcasting. Thanks so much, Alexander. That's very genuinely very, very nice of you to say.
Thank you. Rude Seeger says, man, this song spins my donuts in so many ways. So many ideas cramped into one song. One part spins it to the left, then to the right, up, down, inwards, outwards. So much donut spinning, it becomes uncomfortable. That's really quite funny. It really depends on my mood, whether I enjoy this many brilliant ideas squeezed into 6 minutes. I don't want to be contrarian here, but during the episode, I did not really like it. So, coming from someone who has championed the Invisible Man, this one is dust. No, I can't do it. After a re-listen without interruption from someone whose donut was spun too hard during his song, and after a full listen on the black side of the album, I must kneel to the Black Queen's brilliance. Not as a standalone song, but as part of a whole, and as a glimpse of the future of this brilliant band. Without this, no Bo Rap, no Millionaire's Waltz, no innuendo, yeah. Let alone a champ.
It's, you know, people have been sort of raising that point that this is the precursor to definitely to Bo Rap and then other songs, but
clearly,
I think that this song, getting this song right on this album and so early on Queen 2, I think it just gives you confidence and license to say, yeah, we can revisit that and we can go back to that sort of well and we can do something that grand and that ambitious and we know we can pull it off now. So I think it's just the first one that probably inevitable many, but for me anyway. Michael J. Smith says, Queen bringing their A game to the turntable. An absolute champion of champions. P.S. Pharmacist on a Harley is a super cool song. Get some love for your music here, mate. I'm loving this.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. Thank you.
Kath Coughlin says, top five all-time Queen. Pure quality. One of the reasons I became a Queen fan rather than just a casual listener. Yeah, it's not a casual song to listen to.
No, that's a deep dive. James Lawrence, not listened to the podcast yet, but this is an absolute classic. I prefer it to Bohemian Rhapsody, controversially. I like that he adds that at the end. I don't know. So far, I'm not sure how controversial that'll be.
It's controversial, yeah.
Nick Crofts, now this is Queen, top five greatest of all time Queen track. Pure genius. P.S. A bit warmer in my neck of the woods. Celsius, of course. Where is he at here?
He is in Melbourne. 38 degrees Celsius.
Fucking word. Holy Christ. Wow. Yeah, that's hot, dude. That's like, I don't like that hot. That's
well, that, kind of... I mean, it's funny too, because if you think about that, the time when we recorded that last song, that's about a 60 degree difference between Saskatoon and Melbourne. Right. So.
Right. Dude, wow.
And Melissa says, champion, March of the Black Queen spins my donut. And she's correctly attributed TM, brackets the Cardinal.
So much appreciated, by the way. Hang on. Sorry, Kev. Much appreciated. Go ahead, Kev. Sorry. You're loud.
So fucking much that it made my ringtone. I am Lord of all darkness, Queen of the night. But I always dot my I's, so I'm also fastidious and precise. I guess that makes me Lord of all darkness, Killer Queen of the night. There you go. I love it. I love it. Grammar pedants of the world, unite. And we'll finish off our Facebook and social media, Randy, with Brian Delaney, who says, two thumbs up, 5 stars. Donut spinning profusely. Whatever you want to say. This is quintessential Queen. Doesn't get much better than this one. By the way, thanks for the laugh when reading my comment and Kevin said my points were logical and Randy says there's no place here for that. Carry on podding, gentlemen. Hey, podding we shall. Pod we shall, sir. We shall continue on until the bitter end. Don't know what the bitter end would be, really, but, you know. What would be the bitter end of a podcast, Randy?
Well, if we had a big fight and it all ended. Although I have to mention this, Kev. My wife was asking me today. She said, so how long conceivably can this go? And I said, well, I think like a couple of years. And I'm like, this has been a year already. It's been 70. This is 71.
This is the 71st episode. Yeah.
And, it's fucking a lot of fucking podcasting, man.
People are still listening. So, we got to keep going, Randy. You know, it's a lot of
fucking podcasting.
Well, I should.
You got to admit.
Oh, it's a lot of podcasting. We've got 93 entries on the main wheel still, 93 songs to cover in the main catalog. When you look at our wheel here, that is just very slowly, it's not spinning. The donut isn't spinning. It's just rotating very gently. We got a lot of songs on there. Now, the boys over and the podcast will rock very graciously invited me on last week, and I did a song called, House of Pain from Van Halen's 1984 album. Their wheel considerably fatter. The section's fatter because they've only got 9 songs now after we did that one. So, and yeah, fucking great song. I love that track.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Me too.
But we're not here to talk about those fucking bozos in Van Halen and that fucking, those Dutch idiots. We're here to talk about these English / Queen. So Randy, I've got to ask you, buddy, pal, chum, friend, mate, what song do you want to listen to?
Jump! Oh, wrong podcast. Fucking hell.
Jump. You fucker, jump.
Oh, God. Well, I mean, I'm always stuck with just knowing all the big hits. So I'm just looking at the side here. And, what's this Khashoggi's ship?
Oh, yeah. That's a song. It's a song. It's what we already covered. It's the second half of a song called Party, which we already did. And Party leads directly into Khashoggi's ship.
So yeah, that's what
song is. That's what you're voting for, is it?
Definitely. And you know what? And it's going to be fucking great.
All right. Well, we'll see about that. I mean, I'm not saying one way or the other, but I went for jazz last week and I said I kind of wanted to listen to Dreamer's Ball. I'm going to stick with jazz, but I'm going for a different song because I really would be quite interested to get your take on a song called In Only 7 Days.
So, Kev, that's what we manifested. What about our friends on Discord?
Yeah, on Discord. And thank you again to Ruddy for aggregating all the manifestations for us. It's a godsend. It saves a lot of time. Really appreciate that, Ruddy. Baron John Williams and Aaron Mullen want to hear The Hero. That's from the soundtrack of Flash Gordon. Nikki wants to listen to You and I. Chrissy and Michael J. Smith, I want to break free. The Moonlit Night is cheering for Mustafa. Ian Winnick, It's Late from News of the World. Ruddy Rutherford himself wants All Dead. Mark Spankhansen, Was It All Worth It? Alan Dudney wants Life is Song in brackets. Nope. Life is Real in brackets, song for Lennon. And at Stephen, so that's Brucifer, says Dead on Time. And Steve Ursel, Dragon Attack with mel.underscore.chi. Would like to listen to Liar.
Yeah. So, I'm with Steve Ursel, the Dragon Attack, man. I'm ready for that baby. I love that tune.
We were all over the map here.
I know,
but you know, I've gone 70s, you've gone 80s, so let's see what this confounded wheel is going to dish up for us tonight. We'll soon see. Oh, I think someone's going to be calling their shot. They are. So, Chrissy, and I believe
Michael J. Smith.
Fucking hell! Didn't Michael call his shot last week? Wasn't that he called his shot last week?
Good question, Kev.
No, it was Keith Austin last week.
All right.
Michael J. Smith has called his shot. What are we listening to, Randy?
I want to break free from the works. What the fuck?
No, I don't need to ask any silly questions, Randy, because I know that you know this song. But that's, folks, is what I often do. So
I've never, ever heard the song, so it's going to be interesting for me. I want to break what?
I want to break wind is always the, you know, the schoolyard fucking chortle. So, okay, Randy, what are we going to do now?
Do your own research.
All right, Kev, so we have I Want to Break Free. If you can imagine that. I guess we knew it was going to happen, but we just didn't really, we kind of weren't prepared for it. And I will admit my naivety here. I didn't know that John wrote it, but now that I read that, it makes complete sense. At 3 minutes, 19 seconds, all our usual people doing all our usual things, with the exception of Fred Mandel playing synthesizer. And Kev so nicely pointed out that Fred is from Estevan, Saskatchewan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so nice to hear of somebody rising from, I don't know, I was going to say the ashes, but, you know, the town's still standing. So, you know, rising from obscurity. I don't know. Like, you guys, if you just went and saw Estevan, you know what I'm talking about. But anyhow, Fred Mandel plays keyboards on all of this, and so that's super cool.
Well, and plays obviously the most important, but the signature part of this song really is that synth solo.
Wah, 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 wah. Yeah,
and you know, we'll get to that, and we'll talk about it. And we'll talk about whether it should have been Brian. We'll talk about what we think about it as we get into the song. But I know it's a bit of a polarizing thing within certain parts of the Queen fandom that people don't. It's not universally loved, that section. But interesting to note too that I didn't realize that it was basically one take. He played that one pass. The only thing that was dubbed in later was that big octave drop at the end was punched in later. Other than right. that, solo was played in one shot, which is pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, well, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it at all. I should just quickly mention that this was recorded at the Record Plant in L.A., September to October 1983, produced by Queen and Reinhold
Mack.
So yeah. As far as I'm concerned, Kev, we can play this.
Also, though, just before we get into that quickly, there are... We should just qualify for people that we're playing the album version here, because the album version, there are different versions of this. There's the album version and the single version, and then there was a 12-inch. The single version, which we'll actually listen to when we do our full listen-through, you know, afterwards, is quite a bit longer. It's just about a minute longer, and it has a much longer intro. And I think partially that was to allow for the video. Because the video has this sort of introduction over the hilltops, like Coronation Street, and yada yada yada. So they wanted that build into it before the song kicks in. So, yeah.
Righto.
Well, I mean, we both know the song very well, Randy. But let's listen to "I Want to Break Free."
I want to break free.
Randy was playing a little cowbell there on my screen that I could see.
Well, yeah, I love the cowbell, hey?
Yeah.
Who doesn't? Who doesn't like a little cowbell? Come on.
I got a fever. And the only prescription is more cowbell.
Does that sound like real drums to you?
It says programming, but they're talking about the Linn drums. No, it's Linn drums, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the all-new Linn drum machine that marks the beat on I Want to Break Free.
So I think there's, I think the drums do, I think some of those were, that's the main, you know, the main bedrock of it, but I think there are actual drums in there too, if I remember right. I'm starting to get confused now. Anyway, listen to a bit more and see if we can hear them. Really is synth heavy, Hake. I mean, you sometimes your brain tricks you into thinking, oh, is that like, can I just hear a bit of guitar? No, it definitely isn't guitar. That's just pretty much just all synth. There is bass guitar in there.
Are you sure there's not some acoustic guitar playing in there?
I don't know. I can you hear this? Yeah, can you?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of acoustic being, it might be palm muted, but I think there's a little acoustic being played. Yeah.
But isn't my brain playing tricks then? Okay.
I think, I mean, you're making me doubt myself now, but yeah. There's some acoustic guitar.
Yeah, you can hear it there for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You're going to say something there. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, he's kind of playing like the broken chords, but playing them really like, you know, picking down really, really fast down the strings, but not playing a full chord. You know what I mean? Like he's got that like diddling you can hear.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say, yeah. I wouldn't say you're wrong.
I think that's my favorite, one of my favorite parts of the song is when it goes into those minor chords. Oh, right. I want to be free, and it drops to the minor, and that just coming out of that really major upbeat happy section into that minor just really works for me. Spins
also, guns. Also right, yeah. There you go. Also, right, when it says when it goes to the "It's strange, it's true," and Brian does his Queenie,
yeah.
Wah, 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 wah. It's like, oh yeah, well, there we go. That's what we're fucking talking about.
Okay, I mean, you know, obviously Brian plays the solo when they do it live, and I got to tell you, it's one of the things that makes this song stand out for me. I know a lot of people don't like it, and I'm sure I'm going to take some shit online about this, but I think it's fucking that solo in the recorded version of this song is fucking perfect. And also,
you can take shit for that, really?
There are some people who really don't like this solo, Randy. I know a couple of years ago, when I was listening through the Latpods episodes and sort of following some of their tweets and things. Yeah, there's people who don't love that they chose to go synth there instead of, you know, people say, well, why would you fucking play a synth like a guitar? Why don't you just play a guitar? But to me, the point is that you get this different, you get a totally different tone. I would say though, too, that as someone who grew up playing keyboards, it's really fucking impressive the way he plays that. And you get those little bits of tremolo where a guitarist would be sort of, you know, getting that effect on the strings, waggling their finger about on the strings. I just think it's cool as fuck. I love it.
Well, okay, so first of all, I love it a lot. And second of all, I'm not sure, because I don't listen to podcasts, Kevin. I'm not sure if I've ever told that before. I just don't listen to them. But to say that this is mimicking a guitar is just silliness. It's not. It's a fucking keyboard solo. You can hear it. He's playing a fucking keyboard. And he's doing it quite handily. And the guy's from fucking Estevan. Do you realize what sort of fucking where he had to come from to get out to go and play that?
You know, he spends 18 hours a day as a 5-year-old in the treacle mines of Estevan. So, you know.
Besides that, though, but seriously, it's a really good solo. And secondly, It I don't think it's mimic a guitar solo. It's its own fucking thing. Man.
Oh really? Because I remember. I don't think I'm remembering this wrong. I've got a very vivid memory of talking with people at school, you know, people who sort of play guitars and whatnot, before we knew, who were pretty convinced that it was Brian playing this, but through a fucking whack of effects to make it sound like a synth. So I'm pretty sure I thought for a fair few months that this actually was a... I think even my dad might have been like, oh, I don't know. I think it may be. Maybe it's... Yeah, I can't really quite tell. Just because it doesn't play like a typical synth solo. It's got those bends in, and it's got the tremolo where you would put it, you know, a guitarist would do it. To me, it does sound like that, which, and again, maybe I've had that narrative in my head now too long that I can't detach it, but
yeah I don't know, man. I love a good Moogie type of synthy solo. So for me, it just hits all the right. As a matter of fact, I don't even know if I don't think a guitar solo would serve it any better, if I'm being completely honest with you. So
we'll watch a little bit of one of the live versions, Randy, after this, and we'll see how what Brian does with it, because it's fucking Brian May. Of course, he's going to make something that
he'll peel off of these melter. There's no question. Yeah. I mean, it's just does it detract from this? You know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But one of the differences between the album version that we're listening to here and the single version, but you know what, the video version that we'll end up listening to afterwards, is now we go straight back in here into the next verse, but Life Still Goes On. Whereas in the single version, we get an extended sort of synth part here where there's a ballet scene. If you remember the video, I don't know if you remember it very well, but
I do.
There's that extended bit in there. It's just one of the extra bits in the song. So
righto, Alex.
By my side, I don't want to live alone. Hey, God knows, got to make it on my own. Somebody can't you see? I've got to break free.
It's pretty fucking cool, man. I love the way that Freddie sings. I like the doubling on the vocal, or maybe it's just like a slight little bit of harmony. The descending guitar line. Yeah, it's so good, man.
Yeah, that's all. It's all just super cool, man. Yeah, they were really, everybody's talking about firing on all cylinders. I mean, you would have to think that, you know, that's the case here, man.
I agree with you. I think they are firing on all cylinders. And obviously, there is a lot of synth on this, and Roger's kind of, you know, relegated sort of into the background a little bit, but Deaky knows how to write pop songs, man. But Smash It, which is a fucking shitty little sort of British music magazine, but that was aimed at young adults, so read sort of teens and tweens. So really Queen at this point was sort of the dinosaur, the monolith of old rock and roll, not what Smash It's audience was listening to. And it says, after the masterly pop production of Radio Gaga comes a big fat dud. An unfinished song, loosely borrowed from Shirley Bassey's ancient hit, What Now My Love, an absurd guitar solo, and half-hearted performances from all bar Freddie. And I just couldn't disagree more. I just think it's an example of how you write a pop song, a brilliant, perfect little pop song, very simply and very economically. And I think that the misunderstanding that is a mistake on the part of that reviewer, Randy.
You should send them a strongly worded email.
I shall send a letter to the editor forthwith.
About the song from 30 fucking
1984.
Years ago. 30 fuckless.
Dear Smash Hits, I was appalled and shocked to read on Wikipedia of your disdain for the fantastic Queen song.
I would like to entertain an audience with your reviewer so that I can exercise my rebuttals.
You said but.
Jesus, Kevin.
I've got to break free.
Well, there you go. Nice little fade out. Quick little song, eh? In and out. Doesn't fuck around.
Well, I mean, I don't know how many times I've said this, but I guess I'll say it again if I've said it before. But I think good songs, they get in, they get out, they leave you wanting more. And I think this does that.
Well, we want more. We're going to listen to, as we do our full listen through. And I think it's a bit sort of, well, I want to listen to, Randy's kind of doing sort of weird little gestures. We will listen to it because I want to watch the movie. I want to watch the video. And also I think that I'd quite like to listen to that sort of extended version. So we'll get the little extra bits in, then we'll just sort of talk about the, you know, whether they add anything, whether they're necessary, and, you know, what we think so.
Wow. There you go. Yeah. First things first, Roger is the best looking woman.
Right. Look, let's address this head on. I'm not gonna lie to you. I really quite like that sexy chick's bum the first time I saw this video. And I was fairly horrified when she turned around and it turned out to be Roger Taylor.
It was Roger.
And I remember thinking, that's really weird that they've got three of the band members and this hot chick at the sing. Like, what the fuck is going on? Dude so... looks good in a miniskirt. That's all I'm going to say.
Dude looks like a lady.
Does, yeah.
Aerosmith wrote a whole song after seeing this fucking video. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, well, you know what? We've listened to it in chunks. We've listened to it in whole, made a few notes. So what we're going to do now is decide... how are we going to vote on this one, whether it's up or down? And I went first last week. So I'm going to ask you, Randy.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to break free. Is it one of the champions? Or is it going to bite the dust?
We are the champions, my friends.
Yeah, easy one for me, Kev. But you know what? I have to ask a guy like you, a rogue podcast scholar,
a mountebank,
such as yourself, who's just out there judging songs all across the internet. If anybody wants to hear, just Google Kevin Brown. Is this a champion or does this bite the fucking dust?
We are the champions, my friend.
Well, I mean, I knew that.
Yeah.
I fucking knew it.
No, so it's go kind ahead. Of funny.
Yeah, give me your thing. You talk lots, so go.
I was just going to say, before I cued you back in, you fucking let me finish. You goddamn fucking ecclesiastical
wanker. Well, if you just
wanker.
Shut up for a fucking second, you'd fucking find out if I have something to say.
All I was going to point out is this. Just under 3.5 minutes this week. A bit longer in the single edit. Over six and just about 6.5 minutes last week, two completely different songs that, you know, other than the lead vocalist, you would swear to fucking God are different bands. And I have space in my head to love both of them pretty much absolutely and unconditionally. So I think that's the power and majesty and beauty of Queen, is that they have the ability to write March the Black Queen on one album, I Want to Break Free on another, and make them fucking work.
That's true. Yeah, it's true. Definitely is an example of, you know, the amount that they can stretch over, I guess, a fair number of years. But yeah. So, I mean, so I guess I'll just, you know, head on, I'll just tackle it. I'm a guitar player. I think maybe most people know. But I wouldn't replace that keyboard solo for any guitar solo that's I could play or probably what Brian could play. I think it's awesome. And there again, I think the lyrics they're very John Deacon. They're very kind of innocent, kind of, you know,
yeah.
just kind of pure, maybe, if that's a better word. The chords are fairly simple. I do believe it's just another Lynn drum, song. But man, I just love it. And so, you know, I often will mention, you know, hey, you guys love the song so much because of the nostalgia factor. And I would say for this one, for me, like the nostalgia factor is high. Like I remember this song. I remember it and I remember it well. And I like it. And it just, like, I forget who it was that I can sing every word. I can with this as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, just top notch Queen, none more Queen.
Yeah. I mean, I think, fuck, I mean, top five, maybe I'd have to really give this some serious thought, but I'm top five, certainly, of their 80s output for me.
Oh yeah.
Just in terms of, like, sure. Again, I mean, it's funny because, you know, The Works spawned two massive singles, Radio Gaga and I Want to Break Free. Fucking worldwide hit, this one. Neither of them written by Freddie O'Brien. No, because Radio Gaga was obviously Roger. And I was looking at the chart positions for this one, Randy. I mean, it was just a smash. So top 10 in Austria, Netherlands, Finland, Germany, Italy, Japan, New Zealand, Norway, Sweden, Switzerland, UK. Again, we do know, and Queen fans do know, that it only hit number 23 on the US Billboard chart, and that was in part because MTV pulled the fucking video because there was a lot of puritanical sensibility about you can't have men fucking dressing up in drag in the 80s because maybe everyone, you know, every single fucking male child in the fucking country will turn gay all of a sudden because that would be a horrible thing, you know. So because of all that absolute horse shit, it didn't quite take off. And I think some of that did a bit of a trickle-down effect in Canada too, because it was 22 in Canada, but a massive worldwide hit, which got a bump again after the release of the Bohemian Rhapsody movie, and it re-entered the charts. So, you know, I mean, it's for Queen 2, like, you know, sort of Queen Mark 2, like version 2, 80s, whatever you want to fucking call it. Top tier, man. I don't know what anyone's problem could be with this song. It's a perfect little pop song by Deaky.
Well, I was going to say that, just sort of add to what you were saying. You were saying, you know, wasn't written by Freddie or by Brian. But isn't that ultimately, when you really think about Queen as this well-rounded group, yeah, isn't that just telling you how perfect they are together? I mean, you know, you have four songwriters. I mean, my God, you got three. Well, and I would say arguably two amazing vocalists.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, Brian's a fine folk. He's a fine vocalist. But so we have these four writers, three vocalists. I'm not sure if you would. Maybe you'd call them, you know, maybe call a few of them virtuosos.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, like, just all this talent just wrapped up in this one stupid band. Well, of course they can fucking write a hit. If they were all together right now, plunk them down here somewhere, you know, they would write a top 10 hit today. Yeah. And this song, with modern production, with some modern producer, with some auto tuning geek wizardry, they would make this a hit too. So, I mean, it's just good songwriting. It's clever. It's fun. It's interesting. Yeah. Love it.
I think it's timeless too. Hey, it's because it is sort of, it's that universality. It's not, there's no, you know, it's not like March of the Black Queen, where you're talking about themes that people don't really write too much, but certainly not in pop music or not in mainstream music. It's never going to get fucking played on radio.
No, no.
But I was just looking, because I when I said that, like, you know, Radio Gaga and I Want to Break Free, the two, those are the two heaviest weights of the, I think, of the heavyweights. But The Works, I'd only 9 songs on it, and listen to these four singles, each written by a different member of Queen. Radio Gaga, It's a Hard Life, I Want to Break Free, Hammer to Fall. All written by individually by one of the four members of Queen, all released as singles, all did really pretty fucking well in the UK. So yeah, I mean, I think you're on something there, Andy. Maybe this band is more than the sum of its parts.
Well, one could argue that. I mean, yeah, just listen to how well they sing and play and write together. And I like the, because we had read through, I think it was Queen All the Songs, where Brian had come back from lunch, dinner, supper, whatever, and my man from Estevan had played the Queen's, or played the Queen, had played the solo to that song. And Brian admitted, said that he was a little kind of put out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. I guess that's his territory. It's his band. I wonder how he feels about it today.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting to know. But I still feel like it's the right thing to do. And to add the little crux to all this, wasn't this the band that released the album where it said no synthesizers were used on this album?
This is only the third album they just sent on.
Yeah, going after that, and they just like, hey, fuck this shit now. We're going, fuck it. It's many fucking synths. What synths? Where are they? Plug them in.
Bring me more of these here synthesizers, or whatever you call them. Plug them in and let me use them. Yeah, I mean, that whole thing about no synths, I get it, you know, and it is kind of cool to be able to replicate all those sounds on guitar and whatnot, but use the instruments, you know. You know, if Beethoven had access to Pro Tools, I guarantee you he would have fucking used it.
I've worked with a lot of bands. And I've had more than one band say, well, you know, we just want to record the way, you know, the Beatles would have, you know. So it's just like, you know, whatever take is the take, and that's it. And I would always tell them, I mean, if the Beatles could punch in and stop and start and redo it, that's what they would have done, because they want to use the best technology available to them.
Well, and they did once that technology became available. Well,
of course they did. I mean, fucking of course they did.
A Day in the Life was not written in one pass or recorded in one pass.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the other thing too is like, you know, well, you know, symphony musicians, they can play, you know, they can play the whole thing and, you know, whatever, it's an hour and a half piece and they can play it all to perfection. Man, as soon as those guys realize that you can punch in and change things, they're worse than any 2-bit fucking bar band fucking guitar player, I'll tell you that.
Well, the other thing about that too is, are you, because I remember you definitely told me about that before, and be like, oh, we want to do it like, you know, like Hendrix recorded, or it's like, yeah, the problem is there's a bit of a talent deficit between you and Jimi Hendrix. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why he could do it, just because he was Jimi fucking Hendrix, you know. So.
Part of the problem is you are not John Lennon.
It's the pink fleshy bit behind the strings that's the issue here. It's not the technology.
Yeah. Could you sound a little more Bob Marley?
Yeah, man. Well, I guess the answer there is no, then, really.
Yeah, well, so, okay, all right. Yes, no is the answer. Okay, great. Moving on.
Okay, well, let's give a little bit of a listen to the live version just so you can see what exactly Brian does do with the solo.
I'd love nothing more.
Wow. Love that fucking dive bomb at the end, eh? That's savage.
He did a really nice job of covering that.
Yeah.
I work with a keyboard player all the time, and it's so challenging to play guitar like a keyboard player would do it.
Yeah.
And it's very hard for a keyboard player to play like a guitar would play it. So I guess if you would really like to just, you know, say that the original was trying to be like a guitar, he did a good job. And then the reverse is true. So,
yeah.
I mean, Brian's a fucking master. I mean, listen to that fucking guy. Jesus Christ. And then he's wearing his cool fucking white fucking suit, looking like a fucking beast.
You know? Just an absolute badass.
Fuck that guy. Jesus.
Ooh, it ought to be a crime. He ain't no friend of mine. Fuck that guy.
You know, and just a small matter of about 70,000 people, the closest friends in attendance, you know.
Yeah, you know, he's just probably gonna go drink a fucking Heineken after and call it a fucking day, you know. Yeah. I don't know, you know, he's Brian May over here.
Love that he throws in those little sort of bluesy, a couple of those bluesy little rags, like right towards the end. Well, and again, that dive bomb, and especially the way he comes back up into it, I just think that's just so fucking cool.
Well, and isn't that the major difference, is that pentatonic scale that he's relying on is not present in the keyboard solo, because keyboard players don't generally play those scales, right? They do, what is it? Mixolydian? What the fuck?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I can never remember. Yeah. But we just don't, because
they just wouldn't play that way because the keyboard's just not laid out. It's just not laid out that way. So, so he's, and that's why I'm saying he's just doing his fucking hell, man. That's the way I'd have done it if I had to emulate that solo, or I would have attempted that, I should say. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, the guy's world class. Come on.
Pioneer. A fucking leader, you know, someone who other guitarists all look up to, or certainly they fucking stolen little bits from him, whether they know it or not sometimes, right?
I don't know many guitar players that don't look up to him in some regard. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? At this point, I mean, let's be honest, if you're listening to this, you're probably an old person. I'm not sure the young kids are aware of his brilliance and genius, or Queen for that matter, but I think any self-respecting guitar player who looks back on their heroes would say, yeah, that Brian's, you know, he's right up there, man. He's top tier. And as everybody is in this band, which is, I mean, there again, fuck am I talking about? That's why we're fucking here.
They are in that. They're in that same space, right? It's like, you know, Zepp and The Who, and where you've got four guys who are all just so fucking good individually, but always managed to find the right sort of blend of not playing too much and playing enough, or playing too much when it's necessary. Just that click with the right four people. You know, you take John out, then you don't get You're My Best Friend. You don't get this song. You don't get those things. If you take Roger, you don't get those harmonies. So it's got to be those four guys. That's the magic of Queen, is those four guys together.
Exactly. And not to bang this over the head too much, but you've got four songwriters. You know, you think about how much you love the Beatles. Well, I mean, I don't know if you like the Beatles, but I love the Beatles. What have you got? You've got four fucking songwriters. And you've got four singers in that case.
Well, three and a half. Let's say three and a half.
Hey, man. You don't fucking diss fucking Ringo in my presence.
Buddy. Oh, no, I was dissing John.
So in this case here, you've got four songwriters again. And I bet you if John would have committed his vocal to tape, it would be fine. But he hasn't as a lead vocalist. So you've got three great singers. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that's, you know, I think the secret to these great bands that we look back on is the songwriting. It's the songwriting, it's the team, it's them together. And then you start to pull them out, a person out of that. And that's when you start getting these songs where you're like, oh, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Where's this balance? Where's that yin and where's that yang? You know what I mean? No, I've never heard, I do believe it's Mr. Bad Guy, and I've never heard any of these people's solos stuff, but I would imagine that would be some of the criticism, I would imagine.
Well, you just don't get the extra sauce that the others bring. It's the same with any really, really strong band, right?
Checks and balances.
Yeah, Deaky saying, really? You think, what about this? You know, you just don't get that, right? Because, you know, especially like Back to the Light, Brian's playing pretty much everything. Yeah, you don't have that at external editor, right? So... But yeah, again, it's what makes Queen the best rock band in the world at the time, you know, by fucking miles, really. Certainly live, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So. Would you say it was a country mile?
Yeah, a country mile, yeah.
A country mile. Those are different than city miles, I've heard. So.
Oh, yeah, much longer. Much longer.
Much longer. Interesting thing, really.
A mile is a variable unit of measurement, Randy. I mean, a mile in Esteban. Yeah. A mile in Esteban is like fucking seven in Saskatoon. Right.
And that's why I'm saying, what was the guy, Mandel? What's his first name?
Fred Mandel.
Fred. So for him to get to the point where he's playing with Queen, he had to go several country miles. And, you know, I don't know. This is nuts. I mean, you guys would, anybody who's listening here and you would look up Esteban, you go, oh my God, that's so remote. Oh my God. Kev and I are fucking in a far more remote place than that.
I gotta tell you, Randy, that I think that, you know, there's the famous statue of Freddie overlooking Lake Geneva in Montreux. I think we need to get a petition going to get a statue of Fred Mandel outside City Hall
in fucking
the
Esteban.
Great city of Esteban. I mean, I think it's only right, it's only proper. It's a fucking disgrace that they're not fucking honoring him without pressure from us, to be honest with you.
I'm gonna tell you this. So, I forget exactly the small town in Saskatchewan. But I'll tell you guys this. I worked on a paramedic show that shot in Saskatchewan, and it was actually a pretty big success. I did 5 seasons on it. And this one little town where one of the paramedics was from, they put a sign up outside the town saying, you know, this paramedic, and I'm not going to say, is from here. Blah, 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 right? So, and I'll tell you this, that paramedic did not play on any Queen songs at all.
Not even one.
Not even one. You know what I mean? You know, were lives saved?
Sure. Sure.
But that's true, you know, that's people, a triviality.
But people are saving lives every day, Kevin. They're saving them every day. Not every day do you get to play.
Not every day do you get to play in front of 70,000 people jumping up and down in unison to a rock song.
Yeah.
That's real exactly. Fucking accomplishment. Okay, well, that's what we think of it, but we have to try and guess what the Twitterati is going to say about this song. It is your guess first, as I went first last week. So what say you, Mr. Woods? How do you think this one's going to shake out on the Twitter poll?
Oh, man. I really like it when you go first because, you know, you're my barometer. But I think that most people are going to like it. I don't think it's going to be anything like last week. I don't think it's going to be a slam dunk by any stretch. But I think it's going to be overwhelming. So I'm going to say 75-25.
75-25, which is what I guessed you would say. I just write down what I think you're going to say ahead of time and just see if it works. Oh. Yeah, and you're in a really good fucking spot there, and I think you're probably right or burned about right. And I don't know for sure, because like I said, I've definitely heard some grumbling about this song. I think the live version, a lot of people prefer the live version to the studio version. Again, it's funny because I've ragged on electronic drums quite a lot on the podcast. I don't always love them. I think they're perfect for this song. But I'm going to guess... I've just got to decide whether to go like a percentage point higher or lower than you. I think that's the thing, is it's like, do the prices right, mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
But that would be a little bitch move, wouldn't it, really? So I'm going to go 80-20. I think it will be champion. I think that the common sense will carry the day, and I think that enough people won't maybe not love this song, but won't dislike it enough to dust it. How about that?
You could be right. You do have your finger on the pulse of the community, Kevin.
I have my finger on my cock, and well, you know it. Not my hand, just my finger.
Oh, you're so terrible.
Well, we've broken free of another episode. I don't know about you, but I really didn't want it to end. And now I have Roger's bum stuck in my brain. Brilliant. At least Brian's get up and shows no possibility of any sort of erectile pyrotechnics. Man, I actually wrote all that down. It's not coming off the top of my head. You'd think I'd be able to find something better to say, wouldn't you? Anyway, if I were to title this episode, I'd probably call it Get a Grip America, or possibly Simply Sensational Synth-tastic Solo. We really appreciate you talking to us on social media, so check us out on Facebook and Blue Sky at Seaside Pod Review, and on Twitter at Queen Seaside. And hey, come join our Discord server. We'll be back next week to talk about this fantastic 4-piece.
Give us a kiss, Kevy.
As I was walking down the street one day, I saw a house on fire. There was a man shouting and screaming at an upper story window to the crowd that was gathered there below, for he was so afraid. Jump, you fucker, jump. Jump into this here blanket, what we are holding, and you will be all right. He jumped, hit the deck, broke his fucking neck. There was no blanket. Laugh, we nearly shat. We have not laughed so much since Grandma died, or Auntie Mabel caught her left tit in the mangle. We are miserable sinners, filthy fuckers, our souls.